Are there nerds here tonight? Nerds!
You are a part of the Lucky 10,000 with your hosts, Evan.
You know how many people have already isolated you saying ejaculate?
And Carissa.
Is he in a movie? Did he act in it? Give him an award.
Being a nerd, it's not about what you love. It's about how you love it.
Hey, guys.
Hey, everybody.
This is Evan.
And I'm Carissa.
And we are the Lucky 10,000, the podcast that gets you luckier than a linguist who loves correcting people at a Duck Dynasty fan club meeting.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, took me a while. Before we get into the reason that that is pertinent, obviously we want to thank Podbean and Stitcher for having us on. Also, the Tangent Bound Podcast Network for adding us to their awesome list of shows. And, of course, the Bearded Pods Network, including not only us, but the Bearded Ones Comedy Podcast and Teddy and the Bassman. We highly encourage you to listen to those, especially since I'm on the Bearded Ones Comedy Podcast. And like we always ask you to do, just to support the community. Listen to a different podcast on all those other networks and just show your pod love.
Right. And also, if you're curious about what kinds of other podcasts there are to listen to, if you're on Twitter, in addition to us at Lucky_10K, you can also check out the hashtag Podern Family.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, it's good. They're a really good group of people, actually. And there's a bunch of, you know, retweeting from a whole host of different types of podcasts. So you can pretty much find one for anything you want to listen to.
Excellent. I love that. So today we are going to be talking about something that a lot of us at least should be fans of because we use them all the time. And I myself am fond of using big ones, even if I'm not 100% sure what those mean. It just sounds nice. Yeah, it's words.
Words. Sometimes I like to ejaculate big words into a conversation.
Right into someone else's mouth or ear holes.
Yes, exactly.
Yum. Okay, now those dick pics are coming for sure.
I'm sure.
You know how many people have already isolated you saying ejaculate?
Oh, somebody should make it like a notification tone.
Yeah.
So anytime you get a text message, just me going, ejaculate.
Ejaculate.
But my thing, so I'm like a grammar nerd.
Yeah.
Anymore. I'm not so much a grammar Nazi.
Yeah, I mean, I do believe that people should be using the language correctly, but however, idioms, slang, however you want to call it, I don't necessarily think that if you use something slightly incorrectly that it means you're a stupid person, and grammar Nazis do kind of bug the living shit out of
me.
Unless it's just completely out of left field, like where the fuck did that even come from, or you're using a word that just doesn't mean what you think it means. I think grammar Nazis are really annoying.
Yes, and largely, I know the difference between less and fewer, and the difference between your and your.
Yeah.
And I appreciate when they are used appropriately.
Yes.
And it bugs me, personally, when they're not.
Right.
But I don't need to correct everyone's grammar all the time.
Right.
It does, I will admit, to some snobbishness here. It does make me think less of some people.
Sure.
If you are trying to communicate something valuable and
right,
that communication is bogged down by your incorrect spelling or your lack of sentence structure or an inability to communicate using appropriate English grammar, assuming English is your native language, that means that your message is dimmed to me. But I also speak typo. So slang and stuff in just casual conversation, like online or whatever, that just doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was about to say, is that when I try to not be judgmental about that stuff is when it doesn't happen regularly. Like, I know my fingers type too fast for my brain to keep up with sometimes. And my fingers are a little clumsy. I have used the wrong word or slightly misspelled a word several times just by pure accident, and I hit enter before I realize I've made the mistake. If it's really bad, I'll correct myself, but I see people do that kind of stuff all the time, and I'm usually like, okay, benefit of the doubt. It's when it happens regularly, and it's the same word over and over again, that you're kind of like, okay, I think it's safe to assume you're kind of a dumbass.
Or when it's not casual conversation.
Right.
Like, if you're actually trying to get a point across, or make an argument, or write an essay.
Oh yeah, that's the worst.
Or do something with your business. If anything business related is misspelled, immediately I'm basically done with your business.
Right. Because we've all also seen those memes or those, not memes, but those examples of people trying to make a political argument, say, on Facebook. And the person they're trying to argue against gets to hammer them for misuse of grammar just to illustrate that maybe this isn't the person you should be listening to on the opposing side.
Yeah, but if your whole argument has to be brought down to look how poorly you spell. I mean, all by itself, that means that you're the grammar Nazi and your argument isn't worth anything.
But it's like you just said, it's an effective tool in that misuse of language does denigrate people a little bit. It definitely reduces their value in the context of intelligent discussion.
Absolutely. I think the thing that has turned me away from being a grammar Nazi and into a grammar nerd is that the reason that I was a grammar Nazi and was so angry about people who couldn't use the English language correctly is because I really love it.
Right.
I really love the English language. I think that it is an intensely complex, very deep and broad language.
Sure.
And I am absolutely in love with all of the things that it can express, just using the words that we've stolen from all the other languages
right.
in the world.
And also one of the more confusing languages in the world. You ask anyone, if you're not a native English speaker, what's one of the hardest languages to learn? It's always going to be English.
Yep. Exceptionally difficult to learn, especially for people whose languages have completely different and much more structured content. Like
right.
if you were learning English from being any sort of Asian language speaker, where our verbs and nouns and our subjects and our adjectives, all of those things go in completely different order and not structured order.
Right.
It's just kind of, well, if it sounds better, it's going to be in this order.
Right.
For the most part. And that just makes no sense whatsoever to people who grow up learning language that is spoken in incredibly strict order.
And you really learn that too when you have a child. I mean, once they get into elementary school, you're constantly answering questions of, well, why is it this way? And why does this word mean the same thing but sound differently, or mean two completely different things but sound exactly the same but spelled differently? And you're just like, I don't know. Latin comes from Latin. That's the only thing you end up saying after a while, because you're like, I don't know why. Just learn it that way and you'll be fine.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a quote that an author put out that was, the problem with defending the purity of the English language is that English is about as pure as a crib house whore.
Right.
We don't just borrow words. On occasion, English has pursued other languages down alleyways to beat them unconscious and
yes.
rifle their pockets for spare vocabulary. And that's true. That is the metaphorical example of exactly what we've done with our language. But though we have one of the most expansive languages in terms of actual word count, our actual use of our words is fairly limited in terms of conversational or even kind of high level
mm-hmm.
discussion. It's relatively, for how many words we actually have, it's relatively small sample size for the ones that we actually use and people know.
Right.
So what I like to do is find words, usually from English, but often in other languages, if it is a word that in fact English just doesn't have, if it describes an emotion or an activity that English doesn't have a word for, I love finding those words from other languages and co-opting them. Like most of us, I think, know the word Schadenfreude.
Mm-hmm.
From German, it's taking joy or amusement at others' misfortune.
Right.
We don't have a word like that.
Right.
That means that. So Schadenfreude, that we've stolen it. It's now our word too.
Right.
We didn't change anything about it. We were just like, yeah, we'll have that.
At least there's no mistaking that it's German.
No, and there never is. German is one of the best languages for, do we have a word for that? No. Well, what is it? Okay, put all those words together, and that's the thing that it is now.
Right.
I used to joke with Kay that the German word for train was engine, car, caboose. It's not, but that's basically how Germans make new words.
Right.
We need a word for this thing. Describe it. Okay, put those words together. That's the thing.
Right.
So I've come up with a list of some of my more favoriter English words. Yes, favoriter is not a word, but it is for me.
I picked up the joke. I picked up on it. I wasn't going to be all grammar Nazi on your joke. Grammar
right.
joke Nazi telling person.
I mean, I think that if you know how to use the English language, you can safely abuse the English language. She's kind of a masochist that way.
Oh, absolutely.
And you can make that cromulent, and that's pretty cool.
Cromulent?
Yeah, The Simpsons invented that word, actually.
Oh, I don't think I know it.
Cromulent. It is acceptable or normal.
Gotcha.
So you can take a word like favoriter and make it cromulent in a situation where it fits, such as this.
Yes.
And I have asked you to come up with the words that Shakespeare brought us.
Yes.
Including the ones that he brought us, and we said, no, you can keep those.
Well, I've done twofold. I've come up with a list of words that Shakespeare gave us that we do use, and then I have a separate list of words that I wish we still had.
Oh, good. Okay. I was going to ask you for a couple of those, so I'm glad you have some.
I just found a beautiful one as we were talking, actually.
Good.
But we'll start with you.
Okay. And these are kind of in no particular order. They're just words I've accumulated from random places and passing by them in dictionaries and whatnot. Let's see. So did you know that the infinity symbol, the sideways eight, actually has a name?
Yes, and I've completely forgotten what it was, but I've heard it before.
It is Lemniscate.
Yes. That is not what I've heard before, but I knew it had a different name.
Did you know that the pound sign, the hashtag, also has a word?
Yes.
Do you remember what it is?
No.
It is an octothorpe.
An octothorpe. Oh, okay.
With an E on the end. Octothorpe.
Sounds like an underwater dwelling, very rich family.
Yes, it totally does.
I'm going swimming in the Hamptons with the octothorpes this weekend.
That's
Charles is coming along nicely. He's such a good octo lad.
I wish I had any artistic ability. I'd like to draw the octothorpes.
Oh, you need to. It'd just be a bunch of octopi with, you know, monocles and tuxedos and canes and bustiers.
So, you know how things that come about during the day are diurnal? Like, human beings are diurnal. We sleep at night. We are awake during the day.
Yes.
And things that are awake at night and are asleep during the day are nocturnal.
Yes.
But did you know that there is a word for things that are active during twilight?
No.
Crepuscular.
Oh my God. That's almost a great descriptive word for how bad the Twilight series is. Have you read Twilight? Oh, it's so crepuscular.
It's crepuscular. It does sound a little grosser than
It does sound very like an adjective for something disgusting.
I wonder if that's because a lot of things that are only active during Twilight are like bugs and stuff.
And Cthulhu.
Is he only active during Twilight?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But that's a good one.
Oh, here's one. Here's one for a way to describe a lady that has shapely, beautiful buttocks.
Oh, yes.
You could say that said lady, I don't know, like Beyonce or J-Lo.
Mm-hmm.
Those ladies are Calipigian.
Yes, I actually recently learned that word on an episode of Teddy and the Bassman when I was guesting.
Fantastic.
And I commented that it sounds like a battle cry.
I could totally see that, actually. And more than one battle, skirmish, or war has been fought over the beautiful buttocks of a lady.
That's true.
So, you know, just a minute ago, you said you knew that the infinity symbol had a word, but couldn't remember what it is?
Yeah.
Do you know that the inability to remember a word or put your finger on whatever the right word is lethologica?
Yeah, I won't remember that. Lethologica.
Lethologica.
The forgetful precursor band for Metallica?
Probably, yes. They're the ones that can only actually sing the chorus, and they have to kind of mumble through the verses.
Every Lethologica song starts, yeah! whom the bell tolls! Time is on.
Oh my God, Evan, that would be the best tribute band ever. Oh my God, I really want to hear that now.
I just want every song to start with the correct lyric. Life, it seems. Drifting.
Oh, that's so good. Okay, I like words that don't fit the normal English structure.
Yeah, that's always fun.
So one of my favorite words of all time is timesis.
Timesis, what is that?
Timesis is when you separate a word into two parts with another word in between.
Okay.
So instead of saying absolutely, you say abso-fucking-lutely.
Yeah.
That is timesis. But timesis, the reason that I like it so much is because it is spelled T-M-E-S-I-S.
Oh, that is interesting.
And I really like the fact that we have a word in our language with T-M to begin it. Something about that tickles
me. Words like that are kind of fun to say, like tsetse fly.
Yes.
Now, do you have sort of a syllable minimum for your favorite words? Have you thought about that? Where it's like, oh, it's only got two syllables and I don't like it.
No, a lot of the words that I like a lot are short. They're little. Like there's a word, a collective gender neutral term for all of one's nieces and nephews.
Oh, really?
Is nibblings.
Oh, that doesn't make me comfortable.
They're instead of siblings.
Yeah, I get it, but it's also
your
just
siblings'
like,
offspring. They're your nibblings.
You never want to address a child as a nibbling.
Oh, I don't know. Well, you wouldn't address a child as a nibbling because then he or she is your niece or nephew. So this is just the collective term.
Okay, a group of children. It kind of makes it worse in a group setting, actually.
I don't know. I just like it. And it's only two syllables because nibblings is much easier to say than I was hanging out with my nieces and nephews.
That's true. Unfortunately, since almost no one knows that word, you would then have to explain it and it makes it harder.
Yeah, that is the real problem with a lot of the greater words that we have. Is that so few people know them.
But you know what? Our mission is we're bringing some of these back, bitches.
That's right.
So that you'll all know.
So I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I know that you write.
I do.
And sometimes if you're writing, especially if you are writing on a topic, you'll repeat the same word.
Yes.
Multiple times.
That is a huge pet peeve of mine, actually. And most writers say it's a pet peeve. And, you know, we do it in casual language, so maybe it shouldn't be a pet peeve. But at the same time, I'm not a stickler when it comes to writing. As long as you're descriptive, I get what you're saying, and I'm somewhat emotionally involved, I'll be fine with it. But one thing that really sticks out to me is the use of the same word over and over.
Well, what's interesting is that there is a phenomenon in especially writing, but also sometimes in speech, where you will repeat the same word over and over again, either because you are saying it a lot or typing it a lot or writing it out a lot for whatever reason. Maybe not because it's in part of your conversation, but if you're writing a play, for example, you have to write the character's name.
Yes.
Every time he speaks. And so it'll be like, Bill, Bill, Bill,
right.
Bill. Well, there's a phenomenon that after you repeat the same word over and over again, eventually it will lose its meaning or sound weird.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll look at it and you'll go, I know that that's the word, but I can't even really visualize what that word means anymore because I've written it or seen it or typed it so many times now. That is actually called semantic satiation.
Ooh, I like that a lot.
In the German, it is Gestelzerfall.
I kind of like Gestelzerfall, but I like semantic satiation so much more because that's a word that does sound intelligent. However, if you have even a passing understanding of language, you totally know what that word means.
Exactly what that means. And almost anyone who's ever written anything knows that, like yacht.
Yeah.
Yacht. Yacht. And eventually it just kind of becomes letters that don't actually mean anything anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's this weird symbol. And it's just like, I can't read that word anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That has an actual name for the phenomenon, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, those are my favorite kind of words. It's the words that, you know, someone is saying and using, and it makes them, you know, sound maybe a little bit more intelligent or highbrow than the average person, but the average person can go, oh, I get exactly what that means. Because that is a problem with a lot of terminology, is it has lost all meaning to us and lost all of its connections to anything that even can allow us to infer what it means. But if I go up to you and say, ugh, I'm so, I don't know, I don't know how to put it in a sentence, but I've been trying to write all day and I'm so suffering from semantic satiation now. I'd be like, oh, you're tired of words. You've had too many words.
I would be like, what word are you satiated by?
Right.
And then you could be like, yacht. And I'd be like, I get that. I totally get it.
That's probably because I think satiated is one of my favorites. I don't know if I use it a lot in casual conversation. I just know that I really like it.
It's a great word.
Yeah.
I think it is very evocative of its meaning.
It really is. It's sort of the opposite of moist, where it's evocative in a good way.
And satiation or satiated or anything about being sated like that is not only evocative of its meaning, but you can tell so much about its meaning by how you say it.
Yes.
Like, oh, I'm satiated from that lemonade.
Yeah, it's a great upper crust word, too. It's a great word that can be used in, you know, you hear a lot of villains use words like that. My lust for blood has been sated.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty nice. Verbose is another one that I tend to use a lot that I really like.
Verbose is good. Very good, actually. I have a lot more. Well, not a lot more. I have several more English words that
sure.
Most people don't know, but I want to go to some of the words that we don't have that other languages do.
Okay.
So, you know, when you have like a weekend and you have nothing planned,
mm-hmm.
Maybe the kid's staying with a friend, you have no plays to do, nothing to write, just the whole weekend is in front of you.
Is there a word for majority of my life?
And you just don't have to do anything. You're just free to do, you know, whatever. Just relax. You get to sleep in late. That pleasant feeling of being relaxed with no urgency to do anything in particular.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have a word for that specific sort of relaxation. But the Argentine Spanish language has a word for that.
Ooh.
It is fiaca.
Ooh.
F-I-A-C-A. It is that feeling. I was encompassed by fiaca.
Fiaca. How was your weekend? Very fiacitic.
That's an interesting way to conjugate that, I suppose. Yeah.
Thank you. Who knows if it's correct or not? I'm going to say it is.
I love this one from German. Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
Backpfeifengesicht.
What is that?
A face badly in need of a fist.
Ooh.
There is a subreddit called Our Punchable Faces.
Yeah.
Which is just pictures of people with faces who just need to be punched.
Yeah.
It's a whole subreddit of Backpfeifengesicht.
Damn it, I wish I'd have known that a week ago.
Oh?
The last Republican debate was just here in Greenville. And look, I'm not going to say that you should be pro or anti-Republican. If you're listening to this, I don't give a shit about your political opinions. But even if you thought Ted Cruz would make the best president ever, that is the most face I've ever seen.
Backpfeifengesicht.
Backpfeifengesicht. Yes.
Yes. Agreed. It is badly in need of a fist.
Oh, my
yes.
God.
The Swedish have lent us a word that says, I think, more about the Swedes than it does just about anything else.
Okay.
They have a word, gratrunka, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing horribly.
And what does that mean?
It is the act of crying while masturbating in the fetal position.
Aw.
It's a very specific word.
Yeah, but, I mean, perhaps unusual for some of us. I'm believing that word may be fitting into my vocabulary a lot now.
So maybe you could look it up, figure out how to pronounce it correctly. But gratrunka. It's interesting
yeah.
what the Swedes have to say, I think.
They always seem so peaceful. Maybe that's why.
So here's one that we kind of stole. It is from the German. I love how I say that. From the German.
From the German.
From the German. Treppenwitz.
What is that?
It is literally staircase wit. It is when you think of your comeback way later than when you actually needed it.
There's a whole episode of Seinfeld about that.
Yeah, that is what it is. When you're just out of the conversation and then it hits you. That's staircase wit, Treppenwitz.
Does that count for improv too?
Absolutely.
Like if we're done with a show and I think back at a scene, it was like, oh, God damn it, yes, that's what I should have said.
Basically, anytime you walk away, it's later, it's irrelevant now, and you think of the perfect response. That would be staircase wit.
That's funny.
And the theory of it is that you're witty once you've left the restaurant and hit the staircase.
Right.
And the French are a little bit dark with this one. It's called l'appel du vide.
Very nice.
Which is call of the void.
Ooh, l'appel du vide.
It's the sudden urge you have to do something odd, like jump off a cliff or punch your roommate.
I'm trying to make a sentence out of all the words you tell me. The problem is I forget them like 5 seconds after you told them to me. Because really, forming a word out of masturbating in the fetal position while crying and the weekend when you had nothing to do makes a perfect sentence. And someone with a very punchable face where you feel like punching them for really no good reason. Those words fit perfectly into a sentence together as well. I just simply can't make one right now.
The problem is that if you have someone who has Backpfeifengesicht, a face badly in need of a fist, and you're thinking of punching them in the face, that's not actually l'appel du vide, the call of the void, because that's not something odd. If the face is in need of a fist, it is not at all odd to think of punching that face with your fist. Mm,
I guess that's a good point.
So we have Schadenfreude, which everybody knows.
Right.
It's the amusement, someone else's misfortune. But there is a flip side to that, which is Fremdschammen. Fremdschammen. I can't pronounce it, I don't think. Fremdschammen. It's terrible. I'm sorry to all German speakers at my horrible pronunciation today. Fremdschammen, the feeling of shame on behalf of someone else.
Aw.
So it's sympathy embarrassment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Another word for that is douche chills.
Which is a horrible word. And I really would like to never hear it again. It's so bad.
Yeah, but it applies, man. It applies so much when you see somebody doing something so douchey that no matter how much you hate them, you're still just like, oh, why did you do that?
Yeah, but this is more like your friend fell down the stairs. Not so much somebody's being a douche and you feel bad for them.
I guess. The Duschenventilla.
Okay, so the third. So there was Schadenfreude, happiness is someone else's misfortune, from Shaman, shame on behalf of someone else. And then there is a word that the polyamory community has kind of invented on behalf of itself, which is compersion.
Oh.
Which is feeling joy at someone else's happiness.
Okay.
That someone else being happy earnestly makes you happy. Not just happy on their behalf or happy for them,
right.
But happy for yourself. That actually increases your own personal joy.
I mean, I guess I could see how it applies to the polyamorous community, and God knows I love them. But yeah, they shouldn't try and capitalize that and make that their own.
Well, we don't have that word.
What was the word again?
Compersion.
Compersion.
That is a word that we didn't really have in English. So it was coined by someone in like the 70s and has been co-opted.
Yet another reason to love the polyamorous. They've already given us so many reasons to admire and love them.
So here's the day after tomorrow.
Shit movie? Is that the word?
No, the word overmorrow.
Ah, okay.
The day before yesterday.
Okay.
Antiday.
Ah, I like that one.
Anteday. It's not an official word. It's kind of apocryphal, but it follows the same structure as all the other kind of words about time.
That would be like if Day were a superhero.
Not anti-Day.
That would be the name of his complete opposite villain.
No, not anti-Day. Antiday, as in
That's
before.
That's the way he'd say it to sound cooler.
You know penultimate?
Yes.
Which is the next to last thing.
Very fun word to say.
I have a funner word for you. It is antepenultimate.
Whew, antepenultimate.
It is the next to next to last thing.
All right.
So your bronze medal winner in the Olympics was the antepenultimate winner.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that one.
I like it, but it's kind of sad.
Why?
I mean, if I was already the bronze winner, I'd just be like, just call me the bronze. Don't give me a word that I then struggle to pronounce to describe what I am in interviews.
No, but if you're, say, writing about him or her, I suppose, for some sort of paper or
sure.
whatever, you say, the antepenultimate winner of the 500 meter event.
You could also say third place.
You could, but that's not nearly as flashy.
True.
And you also know palindrome?
Yes.
I have a funner word for you there as well.
Hit me.
Which is immordinalap.
Mm.
It is the reverse of palindrome.
Oh.
And immordinalap is an actual word. And what it means is, as opposed to palindrome, where the reverse spelling of the word is the word.
Right.
Again, this is when the reverse spelling of the word is a different actual word.
So a majority of words then?
No.
Oh, it has to be a different word that's
an
already
an actual word.
Ah, okay.
Right. So like the palindrome has no palindrome.
Right.
The palindrome has an immordinalap because immordinalap is a word meaning when the reverse spelling of a word is a different actual word.
Immordinalap.
Immordinalap. I love that one.
That's like a person with very large legs sitting down. Immordinalap. That's like two laps, maybe three.
Are you right-handed?
I am.
Are you ambidextrous in any way?
You know, not really. The only weird, even slightly kind of ambidextrous thing I've ever done is I always, when I wear watches, which is rarely, I would always put them on my right hand with my left hand. That's the closest I get.
Okay. And like for me, it's easier for me to eat with a fork in my left hand than with a fork in my right.
Yeah, no, other than that, I'm totally right, dominant right-handed.
Yeah, I'm exceptionally dominantly right-handed. I have known a couple people who were mostly ambidextrous. No one who was purely ambidextrous,
right.
But some people who could do almost everything just about as well with both hands. I didn't know until recently that there is actually a word that means not that you are equally good with both hands, but that you are equally bad with both.
Okay.
Which is ambisinistrous.
Ooh.
Which is a very clumsy word to say.
Ambisinistrous. But it, again, sounds like a villain.
Kind of. Although that's not exactly intentional, but left-handed people, that's where sinister comes from. Like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, people who are left-handed write sinister. And that's always been, people who were left-handed were often accused of witchcraft or
right,
sorcery.
Right.
They were looked down upon as being evil or bad or of low moral character. That's
all true, common, by the way.
Right, totally true. Like gingers.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where that kind of derived. And so the fact that if you are equally good with both hands, you are ambidextrous.
Right.
Dextrous being a positive and ambisinistrous being a negative. That's where that came from.
Excellent.
Okay. Have you ever noticed that sometimes there are weird names that people have for their profession?
Yes.
Like maybe you have a janitor whose name is Mr. Clean.
Yes.
Or you have a dentist named Dr. Payne.
Right.
That is actually a thing. That's called nominal determination.
Hmm. Again, makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Often your name can more readily determine the kind of course of your life than we would think. So you will find, not more frequently, but frequently, there are people
yeah,
whose
probably
names...
Probably a holdover from the days where people's names were what they did.
Exactly. Like butcher, weaver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smith.
Yeah.
But nominal determination being a thing has lent to the word aptonym.
Oh.
Which is the name that someone has when their name suits their profession.
Right.
It is an aptonym.
Yeah.
Because it's a name which is apt.
Yes. I like that. I like it when you can break them down and actually go, oh, I can figure out exactly what that means.
Yeah. Etymology is fascinating to me, finding out how we got to the word that we have now.
Right.
Because sometimes it's very clear. Like, I totally get why aptonym is aptonym. That makes perfect sense.
Right.
And I didn't really need to have that explained to me. It's kind of right there in the word.
There you go.
But when it doesn't make sense at all, I really like to be able to find out what changed to get us to having the word, like, goodbye. Do you know why we have the word goodbye?
No.
Because the phrase used to be, God be with ye.
Ah.
And someone ages ago, some dude, wrote, God be, just the letter B,
mm-hmm.
W, ye, God be we, as a shorthand. And that eventually turned into one word of goodbye.
Interesting. I think I had heard that before. So this is the problem we get in discussions like this. I don't want to sound like an idiot, so I'm always struggling to think, oh, God, I know. But a lot of times I have heard these things before. I have completely forgotten about them 5 seconds later. I can't remember any of the words we've talked about so far.
No?
Honestly, not a one. Not that it's not interesting. And just for you out there.
We can challenge our viewers. We can challenge our listeners to see if they remember any of them.
Yeah. And it also gives them an excuse to listen to the episode again and again and again.
That's true. Because then they can cheat, technically.
Yes. We encourage cheating here on the Lucky 10,000. We just want you to get lucky. We don't give a shit how.
So there is a word for the measurement of the amount of something you can carry with your hands cupped together.
Okay.
That measurement is yepsen. That is the amount of something you can carry with your hands cupped together. You can carry a yepsen of something.
That needs to show up in cookbooks.
It should. It absolutely should.
A pinch of salt, a yepsen of sugar.
Get a yepsen of rice.
Yeah.
And put it in the bowl.
I guarantee it's out there somewhere.
That'd be so cool. Got a couple more really good ones, and then I want to move on to Shakespeare.
Yes.
Okay. This is one of the more fun words to say. Borborygmus.
Ooh.
It's the rumbling sounds caused by gas moving through the intestines.
Wow.
It's basically your stomach growling is borborygmus.
Borborygmus.
That's the technical / medical term for
it. Also, I believe a Silver Surfer villain.
Yes, probably.
I think he was from the Kirby era.
And oh, dude. Shit. Now I've forgotten the word myself.
There's got to be a word for that.
It is actually the word that I have forgotten. Lethologica.
Yeah.
So our band, our tribute band, Lethologica, should totally use this, like, maybe an album title. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
It's a mondegreen.
A mondegreen.
Do you know what a mondegreen is? You do know what a mondegreen is. I know that you've heard them before.
I knew a girl named Amanda Green.
It's the mishearing of a word or phrase, often in a song, that creates a new meaning.
Hey, guys, thank you for coming out tonight. Do you have our new album, Amanda? Yeah.
It's like there's a bathroom on the right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excuse me while I kiss this guy.
Excuse me while I kiss this guy. Those are mondegreens.
And there's a wino down the road.
Exactly.
Love it.
I love those.
Yeah,
I
they're
love
fun.
Love those.
They're fun. Because we've all done it, too. I mean,
oh, totally.
The best is getting found out whilst you're singing the song to someone. What was the one? My last girlfriend, we were talking about that Whitesnake song. Here I go again on my own. It was either talking to her or possibly even talking to you. And I went, you know, that song has such a dumb lyric. Like a twister, I was born to walk alone. Twisters don't walk. She was like, no, because it's Drifter.
That is awesome. Yeah,
that would make a lot more sense. That's the best when you're getting all uppity about something. And you really think you're in the right and you feel passionately about it. Like, it's a catchy song, but goddamn, what a stupid lyric. And it's because that's not the lyric.
What I've always hated is that if I have done that, maybe it's usually because I don't have any fucking idea what you just said in your song. Right. So I'm just repeating it phonetically.
Oh, yeah. That's what we all do.
And someone goes, what did you just say?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know.
Have you ever had that situation come up, though, where you are doing it phonetically and it's kind of right, so everyone thinks you know it, and then one day you're just like, oh, that's what that word is.
I really hate it when I'm doing that and someone's like, man, I've never understood what they say. What did they just say? And I'm like, you know, words.
La la la. That's what it was. Because I do that all the time. I will sing it phonetically and have no idea what it is while I'm listening to the song. And when I'm singing it back to myself, I'm like, oh, it's travel.
So The Lonely Island has a song, Turtleneck and Chain.
Yeah.
And I had a mondegreen in that one. I'm trying to remember it. Oh, it's okay. The lyric is, got more chains than the Snow Patrol. Everyone razor thin, like an insect stripper pole.
Right.
Okay, well, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, the first time I heard it, insect stripper pole is not what I heard.
Well, why would it be your first go-to? It's a clever lyric, but not one you could predict.
I mean, it makes perfect sense in context.
Makes
but
perfect sense.
What I heard, I can't remember exactly, but I think it was like inside trip-a-ho, which doesn't make sense.
But for Lonely Island, though, it could have easily been either one.
Sure. Everyone razor thin like an inside trip-a-ho. So that's what I would sing. Like,
have you ever had an instance, though, where everyone else heard it wrong except for you and you had to defend yourself? I've had two instances of that in my life, and they were one of them was very egregious. Where in Highway to Hell, because it's even like, you know, lyric sheets, most people that are too young to remember lyric sheets, right. You know, you used to get a tape or a CD and it would come with the lyrics to the songs. And yeah, of course, there'd be the occasional typo. But when you could actually say, no, this is what I hear, and it says it in the lyric sheet, and everyone around you was like, no, you're dumb. There used to be a Van Halen song I got into an argument with my brother about because he was a huge Van Halen fan, and it was the Hagar days. And they were talking about something in the previous line of the song was about taking a picture, and the line was waiting for someone to come into focus. And he says it very bluntly, like Sammy Hagar, regardless of whether you like him or not, he's not hard to understand.
No, not at all.
And he was waiting for someone to come into focus. And my brother was singing it one day, and he was waiting for someone to come into money.
What?
And I was like... No, that's wrong. But I was the younger brother at the time. And then we were in a car with this lady and her kids who used to take us home from school every day. And I was like, no, he's saying focus. And they were all like, no, I'm pretty sure it's money. And I was like, no, he just talked about taking a picture. And then I pulled up the lyric sheet and it said focus in there. And they were still all like, no, you're wrong. It's money. I'm like, just because that's what you hear.
That, like, see, I totally get there's a bathroom on the right or yeah. There's a wino down the road. Like, I get it. Because it's, I mean, yeah, I could totally see that. But that's not even similar.
No, not at all. The worst one, though, the worst one ever is I actually got into an argument with someone about this. And I'm not even going to say what they thought it was, but you'll know what I mean. Highway to Hell by AC/DC. Season ticket on a one-way ride.
Well, there is some apocrypha to say that mishearing is actually correct.
Well, what is the mishearing you've heard?
Well, it's a word that I'm not going to say.
You're not the only one that has heard people think that's what he said?
And I've actually heard that that's not actually incorrect.
No, it's incorrect. It is incorrect. I had a transcriber music book, a season ticket on a one-way ride. Lyrics,
no.
Season ticket on a one-way ride.
I know that that's true.
And it also makes it, the translation for this that people have used doesn't make any sense.
I know. Believe me, I know. And there was actually a really long discussion about it on a radio show that I was listening to like 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, my God.
And I have no sources because I was listening to a radio show in the car. But they were at least citing sources as they were talking about this. And there was apparently an interview done with someone who was in the studio with them as it was being recorded, who did not deny that that was a not unintentional mishearing.
No, I can't believe that. I simply can't believe that. If you don't know what we're talking about, then you probably shouldn't. But the line that some people say that line actually is actually really offensive and terrible. So neither of us are going to actually repeat it. But
right.
It also doesn't make any fucking sense.
No, it doesn't. It's nonsensical. But again, I have heard at least some indication that it isn't as bad as coming into money or whatever.
Right. But also, like, you know, I am a huge AC/DC fan. I've heard the song 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard that in it at all. So I think that that's just urban legend.
And I'm happy to believe that.
Yeah, I would.
I'm just telling you that the couple of people that you've heard say that aren't the only people that have said that.
I thought this was a very private discussion that no one else ever had, but
nope.
Apparently not.
Nope.
Anyway, before we get to Shakespeare, do you have any left?
I have several left. Let me see. So everybody knows about euphemisms.
Yes.
There is actually an opposite to euphemism, which is dysphemism.
Okay.
Which is the most brutally unpleasant way of describing something.
Excellent.
As opposed to a euphemism, which is kind of a vague,
right.
Slightly more pleasant way to allude to a thing.
Yes.
This is just super brutal.
Right.
Instead of being subtle, you right. are not at all subtle.
Right. Not at all.
Griffinage,
mm.
which is just a fancy word for bad handwriting that's so bad it's basically scribble.
Ah. Or possibly belonging to a class in Harry Potter.
Yes. Absolutely. Possibly. Autological. It is a word that describes itself.
Ah.
Word is a word.
Again, that makes perfect sense.
Yep. Noun is a noun. Short is short. Polysyllabic is polysyllabic.
Right.
It's a word about words, which I love.
Very nice.
Potvaliency.
All right.
Which sounds a little bit like what it is, which is bravery as the result of being very drunk.
Ah.
It is the single word for liquid courage.
We've all been there.
And I'll make this one the last one.
Okay.
Earworm.
Now, is this the catchy song syndrome?
Yes, it's from the German. And I don't remember what the actual German word is, like earworm or something.
I was going to say, I think I do. It's earworm.
It's just a song that gets stuck in your head that won't leave. So Mambo number 5.
Ugh.
The Proclaimers, 500 Miles.
Right.
Those songs that just won't leave. Chumbawamba.
Yeah. Which the name of that earworms. Band becomes an earworm in itself.
Yeah, that's true. So I've got a bunch more, but, you know, I really like to end on earworm because then I get to say things like Mambo number 5 or Barbie Girl, and everyone will be singing them for days.
Yeah, well, you know, the best palate cleanser for that sort of thing is Elizabethan speak.
I love Shakespeare.
If you want to get Mambo number 5 out of your head, then let's throw some Shakespeare at you.
Oh, so good.
We both have had involvement over the years in Shakespeare in many ways, shapes, or forms. I got the chance a couple of years ago, my most recent, probably 3 or 4 years ago, I got to play Hamlet, which was amazing.
Mm.
I did it for Shakespeare in the Park, and something I never thought I'd get to do, but I got to do it. And, you know, I got to have those beautiful speeches. You know, everyone talks about to be or not to be. Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew is pretty amazing. Anyway, and you do encounter a lot. You know, Shakespeare is not nearly as complicated as people think.
No.
But even without a scholarly background in it, which, you know, I think it's good to have, but sometimes I think people get a little too bogged down in the scholarly when they're doing Shakespeare.
Yeah.
You just sort of let the words wash over you. But context is important. You have to know, you have to at least know what the fuck you're saying. So everyone gets intimidated by it because there are a lot of words that Shakespeare used that either were used at the time and are simply not used now, or were never used before in that way.
Yeah, and he just decided to, like, ejaculate some words into the script.
Yeah, all over that script.
He made up so many words.
And that's the thing, too. He also changed current pronunciations of words to fit his meter, which a lot of people, you know, that's one of the reasons when you're going along an iambic pentameter, you get, it should be ever, but it's error, or, you know, go over the hill. You know, it's not that he was trying to change those words per se. He just needed something to fit into the rhythmic patterns. So he thought it would sound nicer, but people would still know what it means if he takes the V out of over.
Sure.
What has surprised me in the research I've done for this episode is the words that he is at least credited with inventing, many of them are so commonplace to us now.
Yep.
And I'm going to start with one. This is from mentalfloss.com, by the way. Words we owe William Shakespeare. This one is interesting to me because it is one of those words that has now taken on a completely different meaning, even though it is still very much used in our language. Bedazzled.
Yes.
As in the quote they use from Taming of the Shrew, Katrina says, "Pardon, old father, my mistaking eyes that have been so bedazzled with the sun that everything I look on seemeth green." At the time, it's a very poetic way of saying something. Now, it refers to an infomercial. Now, it's basically trinkets, which it wouldn't surprise me if he invented that word.
Right.
Some of the other ones that I was very surprised to find that he is at least credited with, and not maybe necessarily always inventing them, but putting them into a more common parlance, is addiction, for one.
Mm-hmm.
This taken from Othello, Act 2, Scene 2. It is Othello's pleasure. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's a very long quote. "Each man to what sport and revels his addiction leads him." Arch villain.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. This is a line from Timon of Athens, which you may never have heard because it's from Timon of Athens. "You that way and you this, but two in company, each man apart, all single and alone, yet an arch villain keeps him company." And the addendum is, "With the added prefix of arch, meaning more extreme than others of the same type, Shakespeare was able to distinguish the baddest of the bad."
You know, I've done a little bit of research on the shit that Shakespeare invented, and I don't remember arch villain. That's amazing, actually.
There's so many others. Assassination. Assassin had been observed.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the Scottish play, which I guess I can say because we're not in the theater. "Macbeth, if it were done when 'tis done, then 'twere well it were done quickly. If the assassination could trammel up the consequence and catch up his surcease success." That's a tongue twister.
Yeah.
Though the term assassin had been observed in use prior to the Scottish play, it seems apt that the word introduced yet another term for murder most foul.
He verbed assassin. That's awesome.
There you go. Because the man was brilliant.
He also invented bedroom.
Yeah. Belongings, which seems unbelievable to me that word was not
Didn't
in existence.
Exist? Yeah.
"This from Measure for Measure. Thyself and thy belongings are not thine own so proper as to waste thyself upon thy virtues. They on thee." Duke Vincentio. People prior to Shakespeare's time did own things. They just referred to them by different words. That's their explanation. Well, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that.
I sort of inferred that by the fact that the word didn't exist. This is a good one. I'm very fond of this word. Dishearten.
Mm.
And I'm not going to read all the quotes from all the plays. You get it. Dishearten.
Yeah.
Eventful.
You know, I can totally see that that was a Shakespeare invented word.
This one's kind of funny. Eyeball.
What did they call the eyeball before Shakespeare called it an eyeball?
Maybe they just never referred to it as a ball.
Huh.
Which kind of makes sense when you think about it.
I guess,
like,
yeah.
Somebody at some point had to go, you know, it's more a commoner thing to just say eyeball instead of eye spherical orb in thine skull. Less complicated.
I suppose.
Fashionable.
Okay.
Half-blooded / hot-blooded. This quote from King Lear, Act 4. She was hot-blooded. Check it and see. So there's that. Inaudible.
Really?
That's what mentalfloss.com says.
I know he invented invulnerable.
Yeah, it makes sense. Ladybird, which no one still uses, but apparently he invented. This one surprised me. Manager.
One who manages?
Yes.
Okay.
Now this one makes perfect sense. Multitudinous.
Yes.
Newfangled.
I love the word newfangled.
It's pretty good. Pageantry.
Excellent.
Scuffle.
Yes.
Swagger.
Swagger. I love swagger. And torture as well.
Yeah. And last on this list, uncomfortable.
You know that? That strangely makes sense as well.
Yes. Now, this is what I really wanted to talk about as far as Shakespeare is concerned, because there are a lot of words. One of the reasons that Shakespeare is hard to do sometimes, or at least hard to grasp, because even people that don't really have any experience with Shakespeare, you sit down and if you really read a play, you kind of get what they're saying.
Yeah.
But you do, it doesn't matter how scholarly you think you are, you will come across words that you are simply not familiar with at all, because they have simply died. And that goes for phrases as well. In my research, I have found one that makes perfect sense. All the words in this phrase are still used today. This needs to come back, because this is my favorite phrase that I have read.
Okay.
Basically a different phrase for puking. And it is heave the gorge.
Well, we use those words.
We use those words, not that way. I have never had a friend go, dude, I drank too much last night. I got to go heave the gorge. I want that phrase to come back into the common vernacular.
I mean, we do use heave in terms of the act of vomiting.
We do. The words themselves are still very much in use today.
But definitely not together.
But not the phrase. And that was the point I wanted to make. I want that phrase back. Another word for hard blows, hardiment. H-A-R-D-I-M-E-N-T.
What does that mean?
Hard blows.
Like punches?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I guess punches. It didn't have a context. So, ooh, that girl really gave me some hardiment last night.
Somehow I don't think that's what he meant by that.
No.
But you never know. He was kind of dirty.
Yeah, he was so much filthier than people think. Or at least people want to give him credit for. Now, this is one that does appear in Shakespeare a lot, so you've heard it before. I do like to use, you know, tis and twas and things like that just for fun. I think I'm going to work this one back in. Haply.
Haply?
Yes, as in perhaps.
Oh, that's good. I like it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So obviously, I was in the H section of my research. This is a good one. I really like this one. As another word for sportive, gamesome.
Ooh.
Yeah, gamesome's a really good one.
That is a good one.
Another word for frightened, ghasted.
As in aghast?
Yes.
That's good.
Yes. Another phrase that I like, if you scrape your heel, you could also say, galls your kibe.
No, I don't think that I could say that.
I would. Hey, you want to head on down to the thrift store later? Or the frippery?
The frippery?
Yes.
We actually still use frippery.
I never have used that word until just now.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the thrift store, but frippery is just like unnecessary foofarah on stuff. Like if you have a dress and it's got all this weird lace or whatever, that's just frippery.
See, I've never used it like that. Ah, another word for fat. Fulsome, which I have heard used, just not very often.
We do still use it. Yeah, we do still. Stephen Fry actually used it to describe Joe Brand as having a fulsome pair of fun bags.
Another word for cheated. Fobbed.
F-O-B-B-E-D?
Yes.
We do use fobbed as well, but not for that.
Again, I don't. Ah, if you are associating with prostitutes, you might say that you are drabbing.
Drabbing?
Drabbing.
Interesting.
Mm.
That's, I mean, I guess it makes sense because I think that whores used to be called drabs.
Mm-hmm.
So I spell you're whoring or you're drab. I guess that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it just fell out because we don't call prostitutes drabs anymore.
Yeah, I guess prostitutes is better. I don't know. This one's good. Fools. If you have a bunch of friends, let's just say, who you want to call fools, you can do it without them having any idea what you're talking about if you use the word Dawes. D-A-W-S.
Dawes.
Oh, you feckless Dawes.
I admit, Shakespeare is the only place I've heard Dawes used.
Mm-hmm. Cursey as a word for charity, I've never heard.
What is it?
Cursey.
Cursey.
C-U-R-S-Y.
No.
Christian Cursey can also mean Christian charity, as said in The Merchant of Venice.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, this is another phrase that I really like that is made up of words that are very commonly used today. Although fourth is not a word that as many people use today as I want to still use. But if you were indicating the direction of something to someone, chalked forth.
Chalked?
Chalked. Yeah. C-H-A-L-K-E-D. Chalked forth. Indicated the direction of something.
So as in took a piece of chalk and drew the direction that you were going?
I guess that's a way to put it. Unfortunately, what I'm looking at doesn't have a lot of context. It is literally just a list, almost like a glossary with no sentence.
Well, I like coming up with what that means. Chalked forth. Because it makes sense. It makes perfect sense.
It does. If you have someone that you were, say, introducing to someone else and you wanted to introduce them in a good way and it just happened to be someone of the gentleman persuasion, instead of saying, this is my fine fellow friend so-and-so, you could say, this is my ball cock.
My ball cock?
Baw.
Oh.
B-A-W-C-O-C-K.
That's pretty good.
Another word for therefore, which I really like, argol.
Argol?
A-R-G-A-L.
Argol.
This phrase, I think any of us that have any theatrical experience or comic books really enjoy. So it's kind of still around. However, it's so much fun to say. Instead of saying begone, you can say aroint thee.
Aroint thee. Aroint thee hence.
Yes. If you believe that someone did you a falsehood, you could say, I'm trying to think of a way to put this in a sentence, but I'll just come out and say the definition. Another way of saying crookedly or falsely, a squint, A-S-Q-U-I-N-T.
Okay, that we should bring that back.
Yes, I enjoy a squint. Although these days it could get confusing.
Why?
I've been a squinted.
No, like he approached me a squint.
Ah, yeah, you could do that. Now this, again, it's this I have to have heard before because I've seen Merchant of Venice, but it's a word that uses two words very common to us, but I don't know that that anyone uses it to mean what it meant back then. Another way of saying marriage, featherbed.
Featherbed.
Featherbed. Feather dash bed.
Yeah, that's, I mean, we use featherbed to describe beds made of feathers.
Yes.
That's weird. Why would it specifically be for marriage bed?
Maybe just a sign of the times that you would only have a feather bed if you were married, that you would be sharing a bed with someone else. Sharing a bed with your fond feather.
Hmm.
Foison. That's a good one.
Foison?
F-O-I-S-O-N, meaning harvest or abundance.
That's really good.
Yes. I like the F words a lot. Another way of saying destroyed is forded.
Forded?
Forded. F-O-R-D-I-D.
Forded. Ah.
Yeah, maybe forded.
That actually also makes sense. Weird.
Now, the only time people use this word this way is when they're actually quoting Julius Caesar, but it's one of my favorites. Ides. The Ides of March.
The Ides of March.
You only say the Ides of March when you're actually quoting Caesar, but everyone has heard that phrase. However, I think we should be saying Ides more often. It is very specific compared to the rest of the words on the list.
I have to correct you a little bit. The Ides of March are it's the 15th of March.
Yes, it is.
So people say that to refer to the 15th of March.
Yeah, people you hang around say that to refer to the 15th day of the month. I'm talking about people as a whole.
I suppose. Though I imagine people as a whole don't quote Julius Caesar, so.
I know, but that's why we need to bring Ides back so they would be. If you went out into the street and asked people if they knew what the Ides of March was, I guarantee you most of them would say no.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yes, I am. Now, this is cool. This is cool. I love the definition of this word, the pronunciation, everything about this word. To turn blood red, incardine.
Incardine?
Or incardine. could be one or the other, I suppose.
Because I know we have incarnadine, which is bright red.
Oh, shit. That is exactly what it is. Incarnadine.
I left
the middle part out.
Yes, incarnadine. Yes, we do still have it. It's bright red.
I've never heard that one used that way before, except in Macbeth. Jaunts, trudge about. We know that one.
Yes.
Long engraft.
Long engraft.
Yes, long standing is what that means.
Okay, that makes sense.
Lym, L-Y-M, another word for bloodhound.
Why would you need another word for bloodhound other than the meter?
Because, yeah, well, there you go. That's probably why most of these words were invented.
And why would it be lym?
Who knows, but I like it.
Like, why wouldn't it be hound?
I don't know. Well, maybe he also needed it to rhyme.
Maybe he did. Maybe he did.
But I want to walk up to someone on the street with a bloodhound and go, "That's a fine limb you have, sir."
And he'd be like, "What, my leg? What?"
Yeah, exactly. Malapert, which is a fun word.
Malapert?
Malapert. M-A-L-A-P-E-R-T. Malapert.
Malapert. Okay.
Impertinent.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, this is good. Another word for head. If someone were to conk you on the head, you could also say, "Oh, sir, you have conked me on the mazzard."
The mazzard?
The mazzard. M-A-Z-Z-A-R-D.
That's awesome.
My mazzard is calling out in ache.
That's hilarious. That's actually hilarious.
Aspirin, please. No, 'tis my mazzard bemoans me.
Do you know who says mazzard?
I mean, they have the play that it is quoted in.
No. I mean, like, today, who would say mazzard? The Octothorpes?
Yes, they absolutely would. Richard, lad, get one of thine tentacles over here and massage my mazzard.
That's so good.
That's probably a good one to end on. There are so many others, though. I'm getting this from learnlexiconic.net shake words. So if you want to see more for yourself, go to that site. There's a whole list of them. Many of them we are familiar with. But if I were sitting in a restaurant and heard someone use the word mazzard in reference to their head, I would give them a standing ovation.
Yeah, I love hearing people not being assholes about it,
right,
but who just have a large vocabulary and are able to use said vocabulary.
Absolutely.
Appropriately. I really like hearing people use English in a beautiful way without being really like elitist and snobby about the whole thing.
Yeah, and some people take it that way immediately because they get defensive about the fact that there are a lot of words they don't know. But when people do it because, you know, I think who listening to this can't go to their friends and go, "Man, isn't mazzard just a really fun word?" And that's the point for people that give a shit. You don't want to lose them.
Right. Exactly. There were a couple words I didn't bring up. I'm going to bring one of them up now. The word is frangible. Frangible means designed to break.
There you go.
So that's not a word most people know.
No.
Because we don't really need to know what that word is.
Right.
For the most part, we're never talking about things that are frangible.
Right.
But if, for example, we are talking about, oh, they use sugar glass in movies, so they'll be frangible.
Right.
So that when you throw somebody through them, it'll just, you know, not hurt.
Right. It's supposed to break. It is fragile, but it is also supposed to break.
Right. So the fact that I'm saying frangible, which is a word very few people know, but actually makes perfect sense and is evocative and descriptive of the thing that I am trying to impart to you, that's great. I love hearing people use words in that way because it's efficient. What I don't like is when people are like, "Yes, I am going to the physician on the over tomorrow."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fuck it, dude. Shut up.
I'm going to the doctor.
I'm going to the doctor day after tomorrow,
right,
or Thursday or whatever. But fucking don't be an asshole. Be flashy if you want. If it's appropriate, that's fine. That's fun. Use efficient language, even if it's slightly obscure, like frangible.
Yes.
Or autological, if you're describing a word that describes itself.
Yes.
Autological is a perfectly fine word to use there. But don't just ejaculate words into sentences for no reason.
Oh my God, here we go again. You and the ejaculate today. Don't just go around ejaculating all over everyone. Make sure it's targeted at specific people for specific reasons. That's what we want you to learn today.
Yeah, and that there are probably words to efficiently and effectively describe what you want to say that are better than what you're using now.
But for anyone out there that does know a lot of the words, and probably many more people that know so many words that we haven't even brought up, hold on to them. Talk about them in your word clubs or whatever it is you do. But we also, you know, we are both advocates for not dumbing down the language and losing more and more words. But it's also, it's culture. Things change. And sometimes in a positive. I'm thrilled that dough is actually in the dictionary. As in Homer Simpson's, "Dough! is actually in Webster's Dictionary. I'm thrilled with it.
That's adorable.
So things do change for the positive sometimes. What every generation seems to think the generations before it or the generations after it are hurting them somehow because the culture is changing. So there's always it's always easy to say, well, kids these days, they don't understand language because they don't use it. But there's some truth to it.
Sure.
In the age of abbreviated texts and emojis and social media, it is very easy to only use the bare minimum of language that you need to get to communicate what you're trying to say, which is fine.
Right.
You know, it's convenient, it's easy, whatever. But, you know, maybe take a minute to go out there and learn a couple new words every day. You don't even have to use them, but it's just good to know them.
And honestly, a lot of the words that are in an expanded vocabulary are simply more efficient.
Yes.
If you're describing, you know, if your kid ever has kind of a temper tantrum, but they're not throwing a fit, they're just like sitting in the corner, sulking,
right,
with their arms crossed, and they're being quiet, they're being silent, in fact, but you can hear how mad they are.
Yes.
Just by their body, they just vibrate with how angry.
Yes.
There's a word for that. It's called mumpish.
Yeah, that's a great word.
And it perfectly describes that kid sitting angry in the corner, doesn't want to talk to you, but wants to make sure you know they're mad.
Yeah.
That's mumpish. It's a very efficient way to describe that
situation.
It will
also completely break the tantrum and break the anger when you go, you're being mumpish. And they go, huh?
Huh?
And then you get to explain to them what mumpish is. And they're like, oh, and then everything's fine again.
That'd be great if it worked like that.
Sometimes it does. So speaking of words, Carissa, if you out there wanted to send some words to us, maybe want us to hit us over the...
Mazard.
Yes. Well, I was trying to say metaphorical. Hit us over the metaphorical mazard.
Yes.
With your verbiage. How could they do that?
The best way would be probably to email me privately, semi-privately, at lucky10000@gmail.com, or slightly more publicly, hit me up on Twitter at lucky_10k.
And obviously you can also use your lexicon by reviewing us on iTunes or Stitcher. Any 5-star review we will read on the show. And just make sure to get us those audio clips of your creative ways of catching Carissa use the word ejaculate again and again and again, and send those to us as well.
Yeah, if somebody actually puts that as a notification ringtone on their phone, I'll be, I don't know, I should look up and see if we have a word for it, flattered and also a little disgusted.
Flagusted.
Yes. Oh, we do have a word. I don't know if it's something that my friend Brad totally invented, but it is something that he invented independently of outside influence. The word is congruences.
Ooh.
For when someone has something happen to them and you're not sure whether it's good or bad, or perhaps it is actually both.
Right.
Like, oh, you're pregnant. Congruences.
You know what it also applies beautifully is acting. If we've all had this situation happen where, say, you get a part that someone else wants, yet they still get cast in the show.
Yeah.
Oh, congruences. Well, you're in the show.
Or they get cast as the lead role in a really crappy show.
That too.
Congruences.
It works.
Yeah. So that's one of my favorite made-up words.
On a quick inventing word note, for some reason there was a sketch that Conan O'Brien did many years ago that has always stuck with me. I don't know why this one, above everything else he's done, stuck with me, but for some reason it did, where they tried to invent a curse word that they could use on the show because they were tired of being censored. So they wanted to have a word that really had no meaning yet, therefore it couldn't be censored, but was still extremely offensive.
Yep.
And if I believe I'm right, they invented the word crunk. That's K-R-U-N-K. And the best part about it was that they actually had old-timey, you know, 50s-style instructional movies on how you're supposed to respond when people say the word crunk. For example, if you were a woman in the room when someone said crunk, you were supposed to literally drop whatever you were doing, stand erect, and spin slowly around in a circle while wailing like a siren.
Huh.
It was very funny. You have to take my word for it. It was a visual gag, but it was very funny because we love Conan O'Brien. Anyway.
Okay.
On that note, thank you guys for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please share it with all your friends. Word of mouth is honestly the best way to get the word out about a podcast. If you like it, then it's safe to assume your friends will like it as well.
Yeah, probably.
Probably. So please do that. Contact us. And until next time, I hope you got lucky tonight.
Good night, nerds.
Thank you for being a part of the Lucky 10,000 with your hosts, Evan and Carissa. Email us at lucky10000@gmail.com. Find Lucky 10,000 on Twitter at lucky_10k. And visit our podcast network site at beardedpodsnetwork.com.